Good afternoon. I'm going to open up a very intimate House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness. It is Tuesday, March 31st. Thank you for joining us. Since we had a long floor session, we also had a very full agenda, so I'm going to jump right in and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2975. Representative Wisnett, if you want to come up, and Wendy will give us a quick summary.
Madam Chair and members, House Bill 2975 specifies that new or increased fees adopted by a state agency do not become effective unless approved by the Legislative Assembly by law, provides an exception in the case of an emergency. The bill declares an emergency and is effective upon passage, and there are no amendments at this time.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and honorable committee members as they arrive. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. Madam Chair, thank you for hearing a bipartisan bill. Representative Gomberg signed on the bill with me after I talked to him about it. It's really a simple bill that reestablishes the authority of the legislators to tax. We are all sworn to uphold the U.S. and the Oregon Constitutions. The Oregon Constitution gives the legislative body the authority to tax. However, before the people decided in 2010 that the Legislative Assembly meet every year, state agencies could, by law, raise fees after sine die. The fee increase had to be justified in the next session, but that was 2 years, right? Not annual sessions. In 2011, House Bill 3487A was passed by this body, which required agencies that had raised fees to come back the next session, not the odd year or long session, to approve the temporary increase, fee increase. So you didn't have to, wasn't waiting till the next odd year or the long session. You had to come back the next session or whatever. But I think, Madam Chair and honorable committee members, I think it's time that we take back our constitutional responsibility to tax. State agencies do not answer to the citizens. We answer to the people. That's a constitutional responsibility of the legislature, and that's what this bill does simply, is does not allow the agencies to tax after we sine die, bring it back and get it justified during the normal process. And I'm willing to take questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, we are on House Bill 2975, story that I started early. We just have a big agenda. Is there any questions for Representative Wisnett? I don't see any. Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to be heard on House Bill 2975? All right. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2975 and open the public hearing on House Bill 3061. Representative Leininger, if you want to give us a quick summy. Give us a little summy. Just a little summy.
Madam Chair and members, House Bill 3061 establishes a task force on family-friendly public contracting, prescribes membership, and requires the task force to develop a framework for giving preferences to contractors with family-friendly employment policies. The bill provides examples of family-friendly employment practices. It requires a report to the Legislative Assembly no later than September 15, 2015, and sunsets on December 31, 2015. The bill declares an emergency and is effective upon passage, and there are no amendments before the committee at this time.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Fagan and members of the committee, thank you for enabling me to testify today in support of House Bill 3061. I think we all understand that it's important for us as a strong society to have families that can make ends meet, and for a lot of families that means having both caregivers, or if there's only one parent in the home, having that person have a job. And as a working mom with two school-age kids, I'll tell you, it is not easy, and I have the good fortune of having a partner who is also there to support our family and support me, but it is hard for primary caregiving working parents to hold a job. But it's really important to enable primary caregiving working parents to have a job if they need to, if they choose to, so that they can make ends meet. So the goal of this bill is to try to, with a light touch, incentivize businesses to create family-friendly business practices. So the bill would say that if we as Oregon are using the power of the purse to buy something, in fact, to buy services, not for public works projects, but in the services part of government contracting, if we're using the state's money, taxpayer dollars, to procure some services, let's give a plus factor preference to businesses that make it possible for working parents to hold a job. So the idea is that if a company were to have some or more of, you know, have some of these policies, then they would have a plus factor in the public contracting, you know, beauty contest. And so the practices are things like this: allowing employees to qualify for part-time or predictable schedules, allowing people to have some path so they could qualify for part-time, providing pro rata benefits for part-time employees, paying a living wage of some amount that could be determined, enabling workers to use leave in small amounts to attend school events for their kids, parent-teacher conferences, conducting regular self-audits to make sure that there's not misclassification of workers as independent contractors when they should be employees, or as exempt employees when they are actually more appropriately non-exempt employees. Those are things that end up having workers earn less money than they otherwise would, and it's sometimes inadvertently done. So having self-audits to try to make sure you don't accidentally misclassify workers like that. And then having employee handbooks, having businesses have an employee handbook that expressly prohibits sexual harassment or discrimination for taking protected leave or for parenting, gender-related issues, already protected leave, so it wouldn't create a new class. But the idea is, heck, without directly mandating this stuff, if we created an incentive for companies who choose to do business with the state, so you could choose not to try to do business with the state, but if you're over a certain size, I'm sorry, if the contract is over a certain size, $150,000 is the threshold that we established in this bill. If the contract's over a certain size and a company has already voluntarily chosen to pursue the opportunity to do business with the state, then heck, can't we get more public value out of our public contracting dollars by looking particularly closely and favorably at those applicants for the business, the people who want that job, if they do some other stuff that we really believe in. The federal government has done this as to employing people with special needs and as to employing, I think, veterans. It's a tool that we have using the power of the purse. And this bill, I think, is a nice light touch. I have spoken one thing. It's a task force. So not only is it a voluntary participation program and an incentive, but the thing I'm asking you to do is create a work group that would develop a framework for how we do it, and report back with that framework so that we could try to implement something. I've spoken with all kinds of groups about it, including the Building Trades Council, COLPAC, Association of General Contractors, folks from BOLI and ODOT and SEIU and AFSCME and Family Forward, and, you know, the whole assortment of folks. There's no one who opposes this. I know there are a lot of other great bills on how we can help working parents, but I'll tell you, as someone who's been a working parent pretty much my whole parenthood, who's worked at private companies, I think there's something to be said for incentives. This would provide a light touch incentive so that we can use the power of the purse in Oregon to get even more value for Oregonians when we make public contracting decisions. And I would love it if you would support the opportunity to create a task force to look into how we can make that happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Questions for Representative Leininger? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Leininger, thanks for your presentation. And I appreciate when you use phrases like light touch and things like that. I have to just tell you, I get kind of frustrated when it seems like the state is no longer in the business of running a state, that we're in the business of whatever, gaming the contract field, whatever. We have minority carve-outs and small business enterprise carve-outs. And I just did a tour on some public housing, and the guy who gave me the tour, he's a guy who rehabs public housing, and he says that he's the only guy who does this. He's the only game in town because the rules are so complex, everything that no one else can figure them out or no one else can operate on them. This is the actual guy himself that's running the operation that does that, and I worry that we become a state that no longer builds roads and bridges, that we just create contracts to provide carve-outs for people. And I don't want to come off as being anti-family or anything like that, just the same way I'm not anti-minority or anti-small business or anti-anything else, but I worry about the collection of carve-outs that we make, that we lose our ability to function as a state. When I look at, like, to go back to the public housing, that, you know, I can build housing for about $100 a square foot. The State Department of Housing and Community Services has one of their key performance metrics that they'll build it for $181 a square foot. But in the last biennium, the actual housing that they built was for $237 a square foot. And, and a lot of that is because of just carve-outs and regulations and things like that. So maybe I'll just give you a chance to comment on that.
Thank you. Chair Fagan, Representative Nierman, what I'm hearing from you is that you are a person who values fiscal discipline and that you are a person who wants people to earn their own way. Hey, I've got a great bill idea for you. This bill right here, House Bill 3062, would maximize good financial stewardship by making sure that we get extra value out of our public contracting dollars. Not only do we get yard services for public buildings, not only do we get reams of paper for our office supplies, but we do it in a way that helps make sure that families in which there is a primary parent caregiver who needs to have a job to make ends meet, that person can have and continue in a job and pay their own way. So thing one, I think that it's good at encouraging people to work. And thing two, I think it's good at fiscal discipline because we're getting double value out of our dollars. So sounds like you'd be a great member for the task force.
Well played, Representative. Now I have to vote for both of your bills, don't I?
I think that's called jujitsu, Representative. Representative Bueller.
Thank you, Chair. I share your goal to be family-friendly, but I think you have several definitional problems. One is fiscal. Fiscal is really monetarily and not these social objectives, which I don't disagree with, but I think you're mixing the two, and I think it's important to keep those separate and distinct because they're very different concepts, social goals versus fiscal goals. But to the question is, who defines family-friendly? Where's that definition come from? Is it a legal definition, or is that just something the sponsors of this bill came up with?
Chair Fagan, Representative Bueller, so in the spirit of being family friendly, I know that everyone is going to be super friendly to me as I respond to your questions, and for that I'm very grateful. And I appreciate the definitional instruction on the difference between fiscal and, what was it, social.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, those are two different concepts, and I recognize that. So your question, in addition to providing that, was, can you repeat that?
It was, where's the definition of family-friendly come from? Is that a legal definition, or a definition that was developed by the sponsors?
I would say that I see that, I came up with that language to speak the information that I gave you on the theory that there are things that we can do to make it easier for a working person to work and also have a family. So if you feel that's a term of art that has a different meaning, I think you sound like a great member for the task force.
I think it's open to interpretation, as is another term that's used, is living wage. I mean, there's lots of different perspectives on what a living wage would be. So I think in terms of utility of using some of these terms, I have some difficulties with them. But one more question.
Okay.
I'm concerned about the members of the task force. It seems like it's very much stacked against business interests. Why?
You feel like it's stacked against business interests? I think the idea of a voluntary program that people can choose to participate in if they want to engage with the state is fairly business friendly, too, of the things that legislatures can do. But I, you know, this is a task force that would help develop a framework. So it's a group to think about how to do this well. So to the and so living wage, as to that part of your question, is not defined with the understanding that perhaps over the course of the task force's life, they would have the opportunity to help define that. And I believe it, you know, let's see. It could include these factors. And then my effort was to create a wide variety of perspectives to be on this task force. But if you would like to offer a friendly amendment, or in the theme of today, a family-friendly amendment, change the composition of this group to be somewhat different, I would certainly welcome your friendly amendment.
Other questions? Okay, well, thank you, Representative, and certainly I appreciate the idea of a task force, because a lot of these issues are exactly what, you know, definitions, et cetera, are exactly what a task force is designed to, that's what they're appointed to actually figure out. So I appreciate the kind of deliberate nature with which you're moving towards, I think, what could be a very good policy, and to work out some of these issues on the task force. So thank you. And Tricia Smith?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, and I'm here today to testify in favor of House Bill 3061 as a common sense mechanism to begin looking at, as the representative said, ways to use the power of your purse to assure that we're getting the best bang we can for our dollars that we are spending. In this case, spending on contracts. You heard last week in a hearing on a different bill that about $500 million a year goes out in contracting, and that's a pretty significant chunk of change. So the state has buying power, and it can buy service, and included within that service could be assurance that with that purchase, we are giving back to our communities, we are giving back to our workforce, we are bringing back maximum money into the general fund to spend on K-12 that I heard each of you or many of you speak so highly of today. We can solve, maybe not solve, but improve a great many issues. In other committees, we talk about the millions we spend supplementing many of our budgets to deal with the poverty level of working people. For our members, we have members who work in the private sector, for contractors doing public service work for public sector agencies. I would have some of them here with me today, except that it is extremely difficult for them to come, and they risk their jobs if they come and testify about problems they have with their employer. So I will just tell you that they work for the largest ground transportation company in the world, literally in the world. They make poverty wages. They are on public assistance. They get their health insurance through the Oregon Health Plan. Their children are on free or reduced price lunch, and their families are at risk of homelessness almost constantly. It seems to me that with a task force like this, we could look at those kinds of issues and see whether or not we could contract in a way to make better sense for our communities and our workers and our budgets. And so I believe that this task force is a good way to begin that discussion to see if we are maximizing our investment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, one question. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious if a family-friendly employer includes non-union employers.
Madam Chair, Representative Buehler, I would think the greatest way to avoid unionization is to be a very family-friendly employer. So I would say probably.
Yeah, Costco, FedEx, think of a couple good. Okay, thank you very much. All right, anyone else who'd like to be heard? Just very, very quickly, we have a bunch of people here today. So,
thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landau. I'm with the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Our members represent some 950 members across the state, providing a number of single services to citizens of Oregon. Just very briefly, I'd like to just raise a couple concerns with the measure. The measure, as presently crafted, does not make it clear whether or not this task force is also to consider whether or not public contracting ought to be family friendly at the local level. I don't know whether the measure is really directed towards state contracts or for all public contracting. Of course, that would include local governments as well. So if the intent of the author of this measure is to include local government as well, I'd simply make the request that members from the local government contracting agencies also serve on the task force for the purposes that is outlined in the measure. Also, just real briefly, applying preferences can be a little bit tricky at times as well. And what can happen, and I'll just give you a brief example, if Oregon were to adopt a preference for family-friendly contracting to give a preference, other states could very well retaliate against the state of Oregon and their contractors because their contracting entities who are not, quote-unquote, family-friendly, who make or bid on contracts in the state of Oregon may not be eligible, of course, for that preference. And that can happen and has happened in the past. So I just would put an air of caution. And the one last suggestion I would make is, in light of the fact that retaliation can occur, one of the things that the committee or task force ought to also look at is whether or not any negative impacts occur as a result of creating a family-friendly preference in the state of Oregon, just so that we have our eyes wide open if, in fact, the legislature decides to go down the road of actually creating a preference for the state of Oregon. And thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, Mark. Any quick questions for Mark? Okay,
thank you.
Okay, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3061 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3305. Senator Nierman? If you want to bring your constituent up with you, you can. A summy. I'm going to use it forever.
Vernacular.
That's now the term in this committee. It's a summy.
Madam Chair and members, House Bill 3305 prohibits utility that bills residential tenants directly for service to the dwelling unit from billing the landlord for amounts not paid by a former tenant, requires a utility to restore service to the dwelling unit at the request of the landlord or new tenant if the landlord notifies the utility that the former tenant responsible for paying the bill has moved. It applies to amounts billed after the effective date.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So for the record, my name is Mike Nierman. I'm the representative from House District 23. Also, in the interest of transparency, I'll say that I am a landlord, although I don't own any properties in municipalities that have these policies. So this is a kind of an interesting thing that came to my attention because the city of Monmouth started doing this, if a tenant moved out of a rental property and owed money on their electric bill or whatever, I think in Monmouth it was the electric bill, but it could be any utility. Then the city of Monmouth started to or created a policy where they were going to charge the landlords for that for the balance on that. To me, it kind of raises an interesting point of just I'm not a lawyer. I'll defer to the lawyers on the panel, but of a contract thing. If I'm a landlord, I don't contract for electric service, and so I don't see how it's legal or fair to impose whatever my tenant has on me. So I've brought one of my constituents here, and she'll be glad to talk on this too.
Okay. Just state your name for the record and have the mic about 6 inches from your mouth. There you go.
Chair Fagan, Vice Chairs Bueller and Rayfield, committee members. For the record, my name is Christina Stutzman, and I live in Monmouth. I am here to support, of House Bill 3305, which would prohibit utilities from passing on delinquent utility bills to landlords. After many years as a restaurant owner and working hundreds of hours each week, we traded our restaurant for a couple of rentals units in Monmouth. At the time we purchased these properties, we were unaware of a city policy that passed on delinquent utility bills to landlords. Had we known this at the time, we probably would have purchased our properties elsewhere. You see, if one of our tenants signs up for electric service, then chooses not to pay their bills, the city does not go after those tenants for payment. They simply put a lien on my property, forcing me to pay for utility services I did not sign up for nor consume. I want you to understand these fines are not minimal. A 2009 article stated that in 2008 they filed 53 liens for about $50,000. That's almost $1,000 per landlord. If a landlord pays the delinquent bill to avoid the lien, the tenant's name is taken off the non-payment list and they are free to open a new account and repeat this process over and over and over again. Representatives, how many months of bond payment do you think it takes a person to get up to a $1,000 utility bill? Monmouth landlords have been dealing with this policy, with this issue and the city's continual reluctance to change this bad policy since 2007. In closing, this is not a landlord-tenant issue. This is an issue of city using its government powers to hold myself and others hostage for bills we should not have to pay for service we did not use. I encourage you to vote yes on House Bill 3305. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Bueller.
Thank you very much for bringing this important issue to us. Actually, this happened to me as a medical student, not in Oregon, but in Baltimore, where I was a tenant, and I got stuck with the water bill.
Huh.
It was shocking to me. I tried to work through it, and I ended up having to pay the bill for the previous tenant after months of trying to get it out of it. So it's not an unusual practice to Oregon. It's also in other states. So.
Interesting. Yes.
I just wanted to make sure I understood. Is it the utility company or the city that you're...
The city owns the utility.
Okay.
The city owns the water, sewer, and electric.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you both very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on House Bill 3305? Okay, seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3305 and open the public hearing on House Bill 3315. You want to give us a quick summary?
Madam Chair and members, House Bill 3315 requires the Department of Fish and Wildlife to recoup costs incurred providing services to executive department agencies. The bill suspends the authority of the department to bill and collect funds from other agencies until the fiscal years beginning on or after July 1st, 2017. It requires the department to prepare statements showing charges beginning January 1st, 2016. The bill also requires the department to adopt rules to implement the provisions and declares an emergency effective upon passage. And I believe Representative Refill has an amendment that will change some of the dates.
Yeah. Chair Fagan, members of the committee, my name is Dan Rayfield, State Representative from House District 16, Corvallis, Philomath, and Oregon State University. As Chair of the Subcommittee on Natural Resources, I meet with all of the natural resource agencies. One of the ones that we were meeting with was Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And this is not an original concept that I came up with. This is an idea that has been tossed around. I just happen to be the one that drafted the bill and is taking it up the hill. When talking with the department and other entities, and actually when looking at the budgets, it became real apparent that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife in-kinds labor to other agencies for fees and permits. When looking at their budget, you can't really tell exactly how much time is being allocated, but there's some significant time that is being allocated to these other agencies. What the problem happens is when you're looking at from the other agencies' budgets and you're trying to determine, well, what is the actual cost to the state to issue these permits? There's no accurate information because you're in-kinding the labor and it's not being tracked. Additionally, some of the other and so what the result of that is, you don't have proper policy discussions in the right budgets on whether or not we should be subsidizing these permits or how much should we be subsidizing these permits by, because this information is not known. The other thing that is when you're doing this and you're in-kinding behavior to other agencies, there's no incentives for these other agencies to judiciously use these resources as it's being given to them. The fourth thing that happens as a result is ODFW's budget, we're not really able to tell how much general fund we would need to backfill to support the other permits and other programs. And as a result, this compromises ODFW's mission as far as conservation, as well as ODFW gets a lot of their money from other fees, say from hunting and fishing licenses, and some of that money sometimes can wind up in other areas that don't necessarily support the constituents or groups of folks that are paying some of those licenses. So what this bill does, essentially in the first 4 years, and this would be the Dash 2 amendments, is it requires ODFW to track the hours and expenses of what they're doing to other what services are providing to other agencies based on fees and permits. In years what would be 5 and 6, it would then require those other agencies to then repay ODFW for those services that they are providing to other agencies. So in essence, the first 4 years are really going to serve as notice to the other agencies. This is the type of benefits, this is the type of services that we're providing, here's the statutory authority. During that period of time, the agencies can look at, okay, is there a more efficient, the other agencies, not ODFW, is there a more efficient way that we can be using these resources? Are we overusing these resources? And some conversations can then begin to happen. In that final, where we're talking, the final biennium where we're talking about repayment, then honest discussions about policies regarding the permitting process, if we're able to look at and say this one permit is being subsidized by X amount of dollars, we can then have an honest discussion about whether or not that's a good thing or do we need to change our fee structures as we go forward. In some cases, it makes sense, complete sense, to subsidize permit costs because there's a public good that we're providing, or it may incentivize business in the state of Oregon. So that's the bill in essence. Some of the folks, some of the concerns that have been brought up is the fear that permit fees could rise. Right now, I want you guys to know this is not a fee bill, not whatsoever. This is a bill about proper accounting. And what this bill will do is we'll be able to then have honest discussions about whether or not fees should stay the same or whether we should raise them. Looking forward, because some fees and permits, you know, we have intended them to be self-sustaining, although we're not sure, we don't have that information right now to even be able to make that decision. Some of the other concerns have been brought up that the Department of Justice or the Attorney General, some folks do not necessarily use some of the services that they should because they have to pay for them. Specifically, the Attorney General's office, I may not want to call the Attorney General because I know that that's going to be an issue in my own budget. I'm going to have to pay for that. I believe that that is actually a good thing when it comes to ODFW's budget because it's encouraging judicious use of these resources. So overall, it's a common sense policy. This is something that if we were doing it in our private lives, we would have done this a long time ago. It's a good accounting bill, and that's why I'm bringing it forward.
Thank you very much. And colleagues, we have 11 people planning to testify, so we're not going to do questions, so go ahead and come back. And just if anyone's here for Senate Bill 358, we're not going to hear that today. We'll be carrying that over to Thursday. And so with that, let's hear from Tom Wolf, Al Elkins, and Dave Wiley. And we have technically 10 minutes left in the committee, but the room will be the room will be filled with a new committee in 26 minutes. So if you can try and keep your minutes to kind of your comments about a minute to a minute and a half, that would be ideal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. We are a member of the External Budget Advisory Committee of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. As a stakeholder, we put together their budget with other stakeholders every biennium. When we first heard of this issue, we went to then Deputy Director Kurt Melcher and said the Oregon Hunters Association would like to introduce a bill similar to the one that you have before you today. And he said he was having conversations with folks about this issue. So we support the bill. We think it's a good bill. We wish that the timeline were a little shorter so that the department could get reimbursed sooner. But we understand my father was a public accountant, and at many dinner nights we heard proper accounting, and we understand that term that the representative just used, and so we think this is the proper way to go. We support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, and that was perfect testimony. Thank you very much.
Chair Fagan, members of the committee, my name is Dave Wiley. I live out in Sublimity, Oregon, and I, too, represent an organization on the ODF&W External Budget Advisory Committee. I'm representing the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. And cutting that short because it's all been said by Representative Rayfield and Mr. Elkins here, we support the bill. We think it's an essential. And the only thing that I'd add would be we'd like to see it implemented, or the capability of the department implemented sooner than later because of the terrible effects that death by a thousand cuts, diverting the license and tag dollars away from conservation and wildlife.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. And is Tom Wolf not here? Okay. So next we'll have Roger Beyer and Mark Landauer. And no Roger Beyer. All right. Maybe we won't have 11 people testifying. Awesome.
Well, I'll try to keep
don't
it
take
within
his time.
1 minute. Thank you very much, Chair Fagan, members of the committee, Mark Landauer with the Special Districts. We certainly express or certainly recognize the daunting fiscal challenges that are faced by ODF&W, and being a fisherman and hunter myself, I know that they're going through a lot of difficulty right now. As a representative of water providers, I'd just like to point out a concern, and we certainly have no quibble whatsoever with the effort being undertaken by Representative Rayfield on trying to account for the services that the department is providing to other executive agencies. However, I'd like to point out an example that might be illustrative of what the challenge is from my client's perspective. I represent a number of water providers in the state of Oregon that provide potable water for the citizens of the state of Oregon. When our members apply for a water permit at the Water Resources Department, oftentimes they have to consult with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to determine what the environmental impacts of withdrawing that water will be for fish and game in the state of Oregon. The question in my mind is whether or not, as a result of passage of this measure, because the measure does permit in, I believe, Section 3, the agency to bill other agencies at this point, whether or not those new fees that would be authorized for the department to issue to those other executive agencies will be forwarded on to the ultimate applicant, okay? So in that case, in the case that I described, for example, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has to determine fish persistence, for example. Now, are they going to then bill the Water Resources Department as a result of a statutory requirement? A statutory requirement for the department to determine the fish persistence as it relates to a water permit. We would be more than happy to sit down and be a part of a stakeholder group to look at the information that is gathered. We'd be happy to participate in figuring out how we can find a way to get some more funding to the department. But but without really understanding the full scope of the charges that the department would render to other executive agencies and whether or not those charges would then be passed along to other entities, such as local governments, we just simply ask that we be allowed to participate in any further work on this measure. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you very much. That'll actually be it. So.
Thank you.
I just want to make sure we get through everybody. We can have people come. If you stick around, if we have extra time, maybe we can have people come back up. So next we'll have Mike Fries, Rich Ainstrom, and Jenny Dressler. We have 5 minutes left in the committee, like 9 people to hear from.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
My name's Rich Ainstrom. I'm the president of the Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers Association, representing construction materials and a number of mining interests around the state. To be as brief as I possibly can on this bill and cut through the pleasantries, we are required in the mining interest to get fill and removal permits. DSL then consults with ODFW about the fill and removal permits. We're required to get dogami permits, and then through the agency coordination, we're required to have that pass through the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We have to get water resource permits, and that goes through ODFW. And we have to get DEQ 401 and air water quality permits, and those have to go through ODFW. So with that said, it gives you kind of an idea of how the cost drivers will be affect our industry. We think it's a great idea that the department go through the accounting and really understand the cost drivers that they have. But we think that just in Section 2B, I believe, is where the costs then get passed on to the agencies. And I think the new amendment is 219, that's premature. It's good to get the idea of what the cost drivers are and then start the discussion about what the possible remedies are. And one of them might be as laid out in Section 2B. But the one thing I wanted to point out is in the case of dogami, as an example, we have hired and allowed passed a fee bill a number of years ago for ODF and for dogami to have a fish and wildlife biologist on staff. And we did that in order to help facilitate the conversation in the Agency Coordination Act. So we feel, as an example, from our industry, we're already kind of paying for a biology position to help that. Plus, the reason we did that is we wanted the technical expertise that we get that we can build in a biologist that really understands the mining interest versus a biologist that knows a lot about, you know, just a lot of general things. The other thing I just want to pass on to the committee that I think is very important is there's a number of examples where very small operators around the state get caught up with NOAA fisheries and fish-related issues. A classic, I mean, and the agencies can come up and talk about how big this was. For Freeman Rock down on the South Coast, very small operator, trying to get through the CHETCO aggregate permitting processes, it involved thousands of hours of everybody, including ODFW's time. If that was passed on, ultimately the applicants are going to end up having to deal with it in some kind of fashion. And with that, it's one of the issues that would have to be addressed in this, how we deal with small operators and the burdens of permitting costs when you have all of this, including when the feds overlay onto it. So we're supportive of the study. We think it's premature to lay out what the solutions are. And I actually think you can speed up the time frame of all of this by amending that one particular section, is that the report come back that here's the range of solutions, not just this one that's in statute, but that we can explore all of the solutions before we move a bill forward that has kind of the cost driver solution already fixed into statute. We just think it's premature. So that's as quick as I could do that.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Chair Fagan, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Dressler, and I represent Oregon Farm Bureau. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on House Bill 3315. I want to echo a lot of what Rich Angstrom said and Mark Landauer about our general concerns about the costs of permits being passed down to permittees and applicants due to consulting, but also our support for Section 2, Sub 1, which would provide for that study and create a system where we would be able to essentially lay out those different costs that are incurred by the department. when it does consult with other agencies for the services that it provides. So those are briefly my comments. I think that there's a general concern within my organization about the pay-for-service model that is outlined here, just that it does, that it would create more of a siloing of agency functions as opposed to allowing for more collaboration to provide those public services that the department does provide. So thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Fries. I represent Associated Oregon Industries. I want to start by thanking Representative Rayfield for pulling us in early in the conversation. This has been kind of an ongoing effort, I think, to fix a real problem, which is ODF&W's budget. AOI has a variety of businesses and industries that interact with virtually every natural resource agency in the state, including ODF&W, and it is kind of it does become a concern on how those fees will or chargebacks will ultimately end up to our permittees in certain cases. We have a number of agreements, I would say, with differing agencies about how those fee programs are to be administered, and then how do we share in the cost. So, for instance, we have wastewater permit fees that are split 60-40 based on an agreement between the permittees who need the permits to operate in Oregon, and also the agency that needs the funds to make sure that they have the right balance of permit staff. So it's always been an important issue for us. This kind of creates a concern of whether or not that structure stays in place and what the potential increases are of the fees. Also, it's not clear whether or not an agency, after they receive a bill from ODF&W, if they can simply just pass that on to another user or to the person that needs the service. And so that's that I think needs to be clarified here, so that it really so that other natural resource agencies don't become just a flow through for ODF&W billing. Again, I think ODF&W's budget is critically important. I'm a hunter, I'm a fisher, I buy my license every year. Those fees continue to go up, and it is frustrating. But general fund really is the purpose. These are the other parts of what ODF&W is doing here shouldn't be dependent upon whether or not somebody's getting permits and therefore paying the fees, or whether or not somebody's hunting and fishing. This is really a general good, I think, for Oregonians, and that's why I think, and we'll continue to have the conversation in ways and means, is why ODF&W needs to be funded out of general fund. It's critically important. So with that, I'd hope that we can continue this conversation, and I haven't looked at the dash twos yet, and I look forward to that. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Okay, I saw Tom Wolf come in, so come on up, and then Peggy Lynch.
Chair Figgin, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf, the Executive Director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. I want to apologize for not being here when I called, but I had to testify in another committee, and I haven't figured out a way to clone myself yet, but I'm working on it. Trout Unlimited here support this bill, and I just want to give you a little quick, I've sent him some testimony on O-List. My background is, for the last 25 years, I've been working on ODFW issues. I have testified, served on more committees, and been more involved with them than not just any conservationists, but than anybody. And so, to me, they're my agency, although I work with all the other natural resource agencies, and they're facing a crisis. And, you know, the traditional funding mechanism of fishing licenses, for many reasons, is going down. Lottery money is not there. We need to look at other ways to fund the agency, and this is an innovative way to do so. It raises money, because even though I support what a previous testifier said about we need more general fund money in ODFW, it's, you know, we're asked, they're going to get 8%. Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife gets 20. I mean, we need more, but as the previous discussion up in the House shows, it's getting money from general fund is a tough proposition. So we need to look at innovative ways to fund the agency, and this is a very good one. And so we, you know, the people that raise concerns, we need to deal with those concerns. We need to write amendments. I like the amendments that I've seen, the Dash 2, but this bill definitely needs to be passed, and I urge you to pass this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages the informed and active participation in government. And why are we here on ODF and W? So the reason is that the League follows the state budgets in a variety of areas, and I happen to have the privilege of following the Natural Resource Agency budgets. As a result of that, I was able to sit on the External Budget Advisory Committee for ODF&W, had a great conversation, learned lots about the issues of this agency. We support House Bill 3315 because good data will make good policy decisions by future legislatures. And that's what this is really all about. We need the data to know what the scientific ODF&W staff are doing on behalf of all of us. And then the legislature in now 2019 with the Dash 2s would have an opportunity to have that conversation and determine how best to fund this issue. The previous panel had great points. So the conversation will be, is it appropriate for the businesses who are getting those permits, and some of those are public agencies, should they be paying more of the bill, or should the general fund be paying more of the bill? And that's the conversation that you need to have. But first, you have to have the data to know that that's happening. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Roger Beyer. I'm here representing Oregon Small Woodlands Association and also Oregon Seed Council. The bill is drafted. I have some concerns for those both groups. And I think that the problem we see it is that if agencies, and I know this is just Fish and Wildlife, but if it sets a trend that if agencies start charging each other's agencies for services, we think it's going to cause these agencies to silo up. And in my past, I've already fought against that at times, especially in the Department of Forestry, wanting to bring on fish and wildlife biologists and land use specialists, Department of Ag wanting to bring on land use specialists and Department of Fish and Wildlife specialists. If you do this so that the agencies will be charging each other for their services, you're going to make that problem worse. Rather than trying to do that, they're going to be coming here looking to bring those experts into their own shop to avoid those charges, and we think ultimately that would drive the cost of all government higher. So I think the amendments make the bill much better. I understand the issue and the need to look at the reasonings for doing this, but like the other people, I think general fund is the answer. Fish and Wildlife Department is a unique agency. They serve a dual role, probably unlike most any other agency here in Salem. And they've got conservation on one hand, they've got users on the other hand, they've got the whole population of all the fish and wildlife species, those that pay the bill and those that don't, they're charged with protecting. So we just believe the general fund is the appropriate way to fund that and then get the agencies working together on these issues and not let them to silo up and bring their own specialists in. So with that, I'm happy to work on in the future on it. Appreciate the thought going into the bill, but I think there's a better way. So thank
right.
you.
Thank you very much. And last panel, Lori Onman and Kurt Melcher.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Lori Onan. I'm with the Office of Governor Kate Brown, and I'll be very brief. Our office works with the 14 natural resource agencies in Oregon, and I think the previous speakers have laid out for you very well the policy questions about how Oregon funds natural resource agencies, and I wanted to thank Representative Rayfield for his leadership on the natural resource agency budgets. I know you're short of time, so I'll just say I appreciate the Dash 2 amendments, because they provide time to collect the data and time to sit down with stakeholders, including fee payers, to look at how to make this workable in the budget and program operation process that the natural resource agencies have. So just wanted to have that on the record.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Fagan. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kurt Melcher. I'm the director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And we have submitted 2 pages of written testimony. It is dated from last week's hearing. We did not update it by saving the paper there.
Thank you.
I am going to spare you the lengthy testimony because I believe strongly in the Shakespeare statement that brevity is the soul of wit. So I will be brief. You have our written comments. We appreciate Representative Rayfield's attention to this issue. I just want to highlight that all of our field staff, the folks in the field who work on these projects, who work on fill and removal permit reviews, who work on water right application reviews, they're all funded with fishing and hunting license dollars. And this is not a new issue, this rub, if you will, between the work that they do on these other activities. They're certainly related to fish and wildlife, but not directly to fishing and hunting. Long-standing concern on behalf of our fee-paying customers related to our activities in those arenas. And there's been legislative interest as well in the past. Senator Walker in 2009 had a bill that would have begun to address this. Senator Edwards, I believe, in the following session did as well. So it's not a new issue. It's one that we think needs to be addressed. We will be moving forward. We actually have already initiated an internal process of developing the tools that we need to be able to track our field staff's time on these permit-specific activities. So we are moving forward with that, irrespective of this bill. With that, Chair, I'm happy to conclude or answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Is there anyone else who'd like, go ahead. Is there anyone else who'd like to be heard on House Bill 3315? Okay, with that, we made it. Let's close the work session on the public hearing on House Bill 3315. And I actually, if you'll indulge me, colleagues, we have a couple of bills we've kept carrying over, so I'm going to do 2 quick work sessions. We've already amended the bills, so I'll entertain. So I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2637.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2637 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rayfield moves House Bill 2637 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Colleagues, if you recall, this is the Representative Lively's bill that he reached kind of an agreement with provides material misrepresentations in communications about mortgage credit products, constitutes unlawful trade practice. He's reached an agreement with industry on the dash twos, which we already adopted. So any discussion?
So we already adopted the dash.
We already did, yeah, last week. I just didn't want to move them without anybody else.
I wanted to clarify previously that on the communications that it was all communications, not just cable. It included satellite and all of those. I wasn't here last week, but.
I don't believe so. Do you want to come up? It's a different bill.
They're,
yeah.
They're similar.
Yeah, different bill. Similar. Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, will you please call the roll?
Aye.
And then 3031 as amended.
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buehler?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
And Chair Buehler?
Yes. That, I'm going to close the work session. I'll have Representative Lively carry it. And I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2637 and open a work session on House Bill 3031.
And Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 3031 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rayfield has moved House Bill 3031 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Colleagues, again, if you'll recall, this one was, again, also amended last week. This is the bill that I put forward on the kind of automatic dialers to require that within the first 10 seconds of the call that they provide an opportunity for people to opt out of the call. We were up to dash 5 amendments, just certain groups that are already regulated, their calls are already regulated, being asked to not be otherwise kind of additionally regulated. So with that, is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, you want to please call the roll?
Representative Bowie?
Aye.
Representative
Wayne?
Aye.
Senate Bill?
Aye.
Yes.
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 Yes. All right, and I will carry that bill. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3031. And for purposes, I'm going to carry over to Thursday House Bill 3262, House Bill 3267, and House Bill 3273. And in case I didn't already, also carry over Senate Bill 358. Anything else for the good of the order? Thanks for hanging in there. With that, I'm going to close the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness. Effectiveness. Protection and government.